Chapter 3. Selling in Your Small Business. By this point, you have come to understand how to optimize a website for the best search engine performance, how this applies to your business, how to identify your target market, and how to find the characteristics about that market that will help you to communicate with it in the most effective ways possible. That is a huge amount of information, but we still have a lot more to consider. For example, we have yet to cover email marketing, paid searches, viral marketing, social media, videos, and your website. That too is a tremendous amount of information, but it isn't as complicated as you might think. Let's consider how some of these techniques would work in terms of sales techniques. Sales techniques. I believe the basic principles of salesmanship are 1. Gain the prospect's attention. 2. Arouse his interest. 3. Convince him that it is intelligent for him to buy your goods or services. 4. Arouse his desire to buy. 5. Close the sale. But there's more to it than that, and let's face it, if you have your own small business, you have to learn how to sell. That's the reason for putting this comprehensive chapter on selling in the book. Sales is a hurt them and heal them game. First you find their pain, then you make the pain big enough for them to want to act now, and then you make the pain, loss, go away with the use of your product or service. In order to sell the product, service, you need to know exactly what the customer wants. The old adage, he could sell ice to Eskimos, is very rarely true. If the client has an abundance of ice, trying to sell him more ice is more than likely just wasting both your time and the client's. However, if you take a moment to think about this, you could find some great opportunities here. Even in this rather early phase, you have identified the client's needs, probably without actually recognizing it. If the client has an abundance of ice, then he might need storage for that ice, or he might even need a heating system. Identifying the needs of the customer is absolutely vital. Often the customer will not tell you what his needs are, so you need to be able to find them out for yourself. This is where the homework comes in, along with the preparation that goes into making a successful sale. Arranging the meeting. You already know a great deal about the company you are dealing with from your research, and this will give you the advantage for the initial sale meeting. With the company's background in mind, it's time to sort out your agenda for the meeting. To begin with, think about what are you trying to achieve? Ask yourself the following questions. What is my primary goal? What do I know about the company? What is it that makes my product service superior? Why does the client need this product or service? When you have the answers to these questions, you have the basic structure for your meeting. One other question, however, is rarely thought of prior to that initial meeting, often with devastating consequences. What do I do if it starts to go wrong? Ask yourself, what would I do in this situation? Often, a sales pitch can rapidly deteriorate in these kinds of circumstances. You have built your entire presentation on one aspect and one goal, and when that goal is no longer beneficial to both parties, there is little chance of a sale. A really good salesperson, however, would have anticipated this. Even if the needs of the company have recently changed in a way that you were unaware of, you can still make that all-important sale. Before you go into the meeting, complete the exercises above where you set out your goals several times, each time with a different goal. Even if goal number one does not look like it has much chance of getting off the ground, you have other directions that you can take your presentation. Maybe a fallback goal could be another meeting in the near future to discuss your customers' needs and pains and how you can solve them. You have identified the company's needs. You have adjusted your goals to account for this. You have struck up a successful relationship. Now what? First impressions. Everyone knows that in all walks of life, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. When it comes to sales, this is never more appropriate. There are a number of golden rules that apply when it comes to making that all-important first impression. Your mood will affect how you act. If you are tired, stressed, hungover, or just grouchy, no matter how hard you try to mask it, you can never hide it completely. Smiling is the most infectious thing in the world. A big cheesy grin can actually do more harm than good, but a soft, genuine smile for everyone you meet can create a very good first impression. Just as it is possible to underdress for an important meeting, it is just as possible to overdress. The clothes that you wear should be appropriate for the business you're visiting. If you are visiting a car mechanics workshop, for example, a sharp suit and pressed tie is more likely to create a negative first impression than a good one. Similarly, a financial institution is far less likely to be impressed with an open shirt and rolled up sleeves. Enthusiasm. You are enthusiastic for your product and the client's business. Why hide it? If you can demonstrate belief in what you are selling, the customer will have a much easier time believing in it too. 1. There are basically three elements in any face-to-face communication: words, tone of voice, body language. 2. These three elements account differently for the meaning of the message. Words accounts for 7%. Tone of voice accounts for 38%, and body language accounts for 55% of the message. It seems that many who quote Meribian's research seem unaware that this second conclusion was not a general observation relevant to all communications. Meribian reached this second conclusion in the context of experiments dealing with communications of feelings and attitudes, for example, like, dislike. Thus, the often quoted disproportionate influence of tone of voice and body language is only really true when someone says they like, dislike something, someone, but their tone of voice or body language implies the opposite. Your body language reflects what you are currently thinking. It is often unconscious. More often than not, we don't realize the signals that we are giving off. Similarly, we don't often consciously acknowledge the signals in others. But the unconscious side of our brain does notice and often dictates how we react without us even thinking about it. Poker players spend years learning the body language of their opponents, as it can be a valuable indicator of the way they are playing. The comparison between a poker player and a salesperson is an obvious one. Poker. The player watches his opponent for any tells that give him an indication of how the opponent will play. It can be something as small and simple as a smile or a raise of the eyebrow. Sales. The salesperson watches the body language of his client to give him an indication of how his sales pitch is going across. Is the client defensive, agitated, closed, or open? On his website, Meribian specifically states, "Please note that this and other equations regarding relative importance of verbal and nonverbal messages were derived from experiments dealing with communications of feelings and attitudes, for example, like, dislike." Unless a communicator is talking about their feelings or attitudes, these equations are not applicable. Some classic indicators to watch out for include: arms folded, the client is closed and probably not listening to what you are saying. He might have made up his mind already. Distracted behavior, for example, playing with a pen or fiddling with his tie. The client is unsure about you and could just be waiting for his turn to speak. Leaning forward. The client is listening carefully to what you are saying. Lack of eye contact. The client is guarded, keeping his own counsel. He could also be very insecure about the meeting. Legs crossed, foot moving. The client is bored. Hand to cheek. The client is thinking intently. Rubbing hands. The client is eagerly anticipating something. Pinching bridge of nose. The client has evaluated or is evaluating your pitch negatively. Tapping fingers. The client is impatient. Steep lead fingers. The client wishes to exert his authority. Stroking chin. The client is trying to come to a decision. Biting nails. The client is insecure and nervous about something. Most experiences salespeople will have come across these examples in sales meetings regularly. Think back to your last meeting. Were there any examples of the client's body language in that meeting? What was the outcome? We constantly learn from our experiences. We evaluate them and ask ourselves what we could do next time in order to improve both ourselves and also our influence on those around us. Read through the list of examples above again. Only this time, ask yourself the following questions. Where have I seen that before? What would my reaction be when I encounter that next time? You might want to consider the following reactions. Arms folded across the chest. If the client is being defensive, you might want to change tack a little. The client has decided that he does not really want to listen to you. Think about exactly what you are saying. Are you still on point? Is there something specific that you said that could have made the client defensive? A good idea may be to let the client talk. Ask him what he thinks. Let him give his opinion. He may feel more open if he feels his thoughts and ideas are playing a larger part in the discussion. Distracted behavior. If the client is waiting for his turn to speak, then let him. Research shows that people who are distracted in this way are not listening to you at all. It is much more likely that they are rehearsing what they want to say in their heads. Let them do it. Leaning forward. If the client appears to be listening intently, then this is a good indicator that you are on the right track. You might want to continue exactly as you are, or you might want to drop in some key points about your product or service whilst you have his attention. Alternatively, you might want to think about bringing your pitch to a motivational climax. Lack of eye contact. If the client is showing insecurity, then try and make him feel more secure. Compliments about his company might be a good idea. Prove that you have respect and admiration for his work to make him feel more comfortable around you and more comfortable with the meeting. Legs crossed, foot movements. If the client is bored, you need to change tack a little. Think of something exciting about what you are selling. You need to pique his interest, so it might be a good idea at this point to unveil any unique selling points your product or service may have. Alternatively, laying out the benefits for his company may bring him back into the play. Rubbing hands. If the client appears to be actively anticipating something, find out what it is. Pinching bridge of nose. This negative gesture is quite revealing. The client's current evaluation of you is not altogether favorable. Time to change your focus. What other selling points does your product have? Tapping fingers. If the client is impatient, it probably means you are talking too much. Let them have a say, ask some open-ended questions that will help you to gather more information on what they are currently thinking. Steepled fingers. If the client wants to assert his authority, then by all means let them. Bear in mind, however, that you are still in control. He is only able to exert that authority because you have allowed him to. Stroking chin. If you can see that the client is trying to come to a decision, you can push home your advantage. This is a good opportunity to reinforce your unique selling points. Plus, reiterate any previous statements that you noticed the client was interested in. Biting nails. If the client is nervous, try and put him at ease. It is possible that you could be being a little intimidating. Think about whether you are trying to oversell your product. These are just a few examples of the types of body language we see all around us every day. As we stated before, we cannot control other people, but we can influence the way they think and the way they act. If you can spot the signs in the body language, then you are in a much stronger position to be able to do this. Now that you have a better understanding of body language and the way it affects not only your sales pitch and technique, but also the customer, you can start to consider other ways of influencing those around you. Because the actual words that we speak form only a very small part of our general communication, it doesn't mean we should dismiss them altogether. Words can be immensely powerful, and used alongside the correct tone of voice, they can be integral to your sales pitch. The body language of the client can be a great indicator of how things are progressing. But to get an even clearer idea, you should be looking to get the client to divulge information themselves. The long-term relationship. When you have applied all the skills you have learnt so far, and you have nailed that initial sales meeting, it's time to start thinking about the longer-term relationship that you would like to have with the client. The best salespeople don't go looking for new clients. The clients come to them. Imagine if you could get up every morning, look at your diary, and see that every appointment you had that day had been booked by the clients themselves. Repeat business is integral to any salesperson, and is why that initial meeting needs to be so heavily emphasized. When you first make contact with a new company, it can often be difficult to know exactly who to contact. You may have a list of names and job descriptions, and you may well have identified exactly who you would like to speak to about your product. However, the truth of the matter is that especially in larger corporations, getting through to the right person can be a bit tricky. How many times have you contacted a company only to find yourself further down the pyramid than you wanted to be? Now ask yourself this: how did I feel about that? If the answer is disappointed or frustrated or any similar synonym, then you would really need to think again. Remember the communication table: body language, 55%. Tone of voice, 38%. Actual words, 7%. And remember how your body language can be unconsciously picked up on by the other person. If you felt disappointed or frustrated, it is highly likely that you have transmitted these feelings to whoever you were dealing with. If you wanted to speak to the director and found yourself speaking to a secretary some way down the line, then how you spoke to that person could have had a knock-on effect. You feel disappointed talking to the secretary. She actually feels quite proud of her job, and therefore her first impressions of you are quite negative. She then passes your message on to her superior. Her body language and tone of voice whilst delivering this message is quite negative, as she feels slighted by you. Her boss picks up on this negative body language and, without even having met you, already has formed a negative first impression. And so on and so on. By the time the director, who you wanted to speak to in the first place, gets to hear of you, the picture painted is not a particularly good one. Not only are you terribly unlikely to make a sale, but any repeat business you would have had, you would have liked, is also flying out through the window. On the other hand, this can be reversed. If the secretary finds you amiable, pleasant, and even complimentary, then the opposite starts to take place. When the director eventually hears about you, in this instance, the positivism has been similarly amplified, and you're off to a good start. If the initial thought of you is negative, then changing the mind of the whole company can be a real uphill struggle. In order to build up a long-term relationship with a client, rapport must be struck between yourself and them. In any sales negotiation, rapport is a vital ingredient. There are a multitude of ways that you can build up rapport with both an individual and a company. What exactly does rapport mean to you? The dictionary definition is a close and harmonious relationship in which there is common understanding. The origin of the word rapport is French, from rapporteur, which means appropriately enough to bring back. This is exactly what we are trying to achieve by building up a rapport to bring the client back for more trade. The quickest way to get rapport is to find something to have in common. Remember when you are on holiday in a faraway country and meet someone from the same country as yourself. Automatically you have something to talk about, where in the country you are from, and then you will go down as far as possible to find commonalities. The further you are able to chunk down, the stronger the rapport. So to gain the quickest rapport, find something you and the prospect have in common that includes everything from hobbies, sports, cars, children, etc. In order to establish a good rapport with someone, you need to understand where they are coming from, and you need to be able to modify your own speech and behavioral patterns in order to make them feel like the relationship with you will be beneficial to themselves also. Remember, you cannot control people, but you can influence them. Think about what you have learnt already. You know quite a lot about the company, you know about the person you are dealing with, and you have already postulated about what you consider his goals to be. If your goal is to generate continued business with this person, not just a one-off sale, then you need to establish that good working relationship. Rapport. Reaching appropriate people to purchase and order repeat trade. When you are meeting with someone for the first time, you obviously have no rapport with them. In order to get that rapport going, there are a number of ways in which you can modify your speech and behavior. You know all about the body language side of things, and remember how important it is to keep yourself open at all times. When you are talking to someone you just met, what do you do? What are your primary feelings? What is your body language telling them? When it comes to establishing a rapport with someone, there are many ways to do this, and many of them take time, but it really doesn't need to be as complicated as that. There are a number of shortcuts that can help you find that way of opening communications and making negotiations easier. The first is, of course, finding the common ground. This could be something as simple as discovering you are both keen golfers, or even that you have the same hometown. Look for visual clues that will give you the opportunity to open this avenue of rapport up. A close friend of mine, who is an excellent salesman, once went into a client's office and spotted a photograph on the client's desk. The photograph was of the client who was the company director, holding a large fish that he had caught on holiday. Immediately, my friend began talking about fishing, a keen hobby of his. My friend revealed that in that initial meeting, they hardly spoke about sails at all. Both men were extremely keen to divulge various fishing stories to each other. But my friend also revealed that since then, he had done thousands of euros worth of business with that company, mainly down to the high level of rapport he had managed to strike up with the client during that initial meeting, even though all they did was talk about fishing. Another way of building up a rapport, if you are struggling to find a subject of common ground, is pacing. We often do it automatically. It's another of the unconscious actions that we perform without ever thinking of it. Pacing is simply copying the other person's movements or tone of voice. It can be done verbally or non-verbally. The purpose of this is to make the person we are speaking to feel more at ease and relaxed in our company. A lot of people, you may find yourself included, do this quite naturally. But it is worth remembering, as it can be a fantastic tool when you are dealing with people that you are looking to build a more long-term relationship with. Four W's and an H. Yes, that's right. Wah. Of course, what are we referring to here is the old famous maxim, who, what, where, when, and how. What we actually mean is that these are key elements to any sales pitch, presentation, or long-term relationship. Whatever stage you are at in your sales negotiations, there are paramount questions that you should be asking yourself more or less constantly. Not only do these questions help you focus completely on the task at hand, but many people find them incredibly useful tools when it comes to setting your goals or evaluating the goals of your client. As I am sure you understand by now, what NLP is mainly all about is asking questions. By constantly questioning ourselves and our surroundings, we are constantly striving to improve. By questioning ourselves, we discover new and exciting ways of doing things. Obviously, sometimes we get it wrong, but that is also part of the process. If we don't know how to do it badly, then how will we ever know how to do it right? The who set of questions is simply a way of categorizing and simplifying this self-tutoring process. In every circumstance, the answers to these questions will be different, so it's important to review them, not just at the beginning of your presentation, but right through all the stages of a sale. The type and the style of the question you will be asking depends entirely on which stage of the sale you are currently at. Contact phase, information phase, argument phase, resolution, closing phase. Contact phase. Whether it is over the telephone, a face-to-face meet, or even a third-party introduction, this stage is the key to your future relationship with this client. Remember all the focused discussions from earlier on first impressions and ask yourself how your current feelings are affecting your body language and the perception you are transmitting to others. Information phase. Put simply, this is where you gather all of the information that you can. Think of it like an armory, and you are equipping yourself for battle. You want to take as many weapons as you can, right? Information is power, and the more information you have at your disposal, the more powerful you can be. When you are armed with this information, it is important to remember that there is still a lot of information that you need, and there will be a lot of things that you still don't know. That is why the information phase is so vital. It's where you gather even more information, upgrade your weaponry. The trick here is to realize that because there are so many things you don't know, you need to be asking open, non-specific questions that will encourage your client to divulge as much information as possible. For example, you know that the sky is blue. You automatically assume that your client sees it the same way. But what if he sees it as yellow or orange? Obviously, this is a ridiculous line of argument, and asking your client what color the sky is probably not going to get you off on the right foot. But the principle is sound. By assuming your client holds the same views as you do, could be manufacturing some serious misunderstandings further down the line. You need to be asking relevant, open questions to make sure that you have a full arsenal, and also to ensure that both you and your client are on the same page. Argument phase. Now you can put all the information you have gleaned so far into use. However, the questions do not stop. We must constantly keep evaluating ourselves, and this is never more vital than in the argument phase. Now you have to ask the biggest question of all. How? How will I put everything I have learnt so far into making sure I achieve my primary goal or goals? By this time, you will have learned a great deal about the company and the person you are dealing with, and the trick is to be able to identify which pieces of information are going to be the most valuable. More importantly, which pieces of information are going to yield the most gain for yourself. The most important bits we refer to as hooks. These are your key elements that will have the most impact on your client. What hooks did you use in your last sales meeting? Were you aware that you were using them? What hooks could you have used in your last sales meeting? Resolution phase. Many salespeople see this stage as the most difficult, but it really doesn't need to be. If you have been able to ask the right questions and follow the correct formula to this point, the finalization of any sale should be relatively straightforward. The main reason why many salespeople find this stage so difficult is because this is where the most problems arise. The client might change his mind or throw an unexpected curveball into the mix. However, from the beginning of proceedings, you now will have been completely prepared for this. Also, you have been carefully monitoring your client's use of words and body language throughout, so you are still armed with everything you need to make the sale go through. Even at this late stage, you should still be evaluating your progress and asking yourself the same probing questions. Remember, we can think 10 times faster than we can talk. This is a skill we all have. Use it. The questions you will be asking both yourself and your client will obviously differ with each stage you move into, but they should always be present. The path to success is to take massive, determined action. Quotation by Anthony Robbins. Closing the sale. This is often the most daunting part of any sales presentation, and I have known otherwise fantastic salespeople to make a lot of mistakes in this section. It can often be difficult to know exactly what the client is thinking at any one time. All of the techniques I have discussed so far, eye movement, body language, tone of voice, are great indicators. But before you can move on to the actual closure of the sale, you need to know precisely where the mind of the client is present. A great way to do this is to ask an if question. An if question can really open things up should you reach an impasse in your negotiations. For example, "Would you like to dance?" becomes, "If we should dance, what music should the DJ play?" "Would you like a drink?" becomes, "If I were to buy you a drink, what would it be?" This works in sales meetings too. An if question will not give you a definitive answer, but it will give you a great indication of where you currently stand. "If I was to offer you this, what would you say?" "If you were to buy this product, when would you like it to be delivered?" "If I was to show you how this worked, what would you think?" In every sales meeting, just as in day-to-day life, problems arise. Sometimes you can anticipate them and plan for them, other times you can't. It sounds obvious to say that experience helps in these situations. If you have been in these situations before, then you may have an idea on how to deal with it. However, if the experience is new and a problem arises during a delicate negotiation, then it could well be a disaster for your sale. Experience, however, is not a necessary attribute in order to deal with problems or objections. Objections. Before you read on, think back to the last time you were in a situation where one such problem arose for you. What did you do? A lot of the time, problems arise that are not dealt with properly, because the salesperson does not fully understand the objection. Take the examples below, for instance. These are all common objections that arise throughout any sales meeting. It's too expensive for me. I've already got a supplier for that. I need some time to think about that. My partner would need to see it. I already have a supplier. What would your reaction be? All of these objections can be thrown in at any stage of any sales negotiation. The trick to dealing with the objection in this case is to understand exactly what the objection is. Take the statements above and ask yourself, what do they actually mean? In truth, they could have more than one meaning. The real objection is actually hidden. It could have pretty much any meaning at all. You can't really know what the objection is at the moment. What you need to do is to define that objection. I have seen it so many times when a salesperson loses the deal completely at this juncture. Their body language immediately becomes closed, an unconscious reaction, or they give a stock answer that makes the client close up. In order to deal with the objection, you must know what the objection is. People are much more willing to give up information if they are asked the right questions. When dealing with any of the objections above, make sure your body language is open and your questions are open as well. This way you will soon learn exactly what the objections are. Your clients are not daft. They can easily spot any scripted or rehearsed lines that you may spout when they raise an objection. If what you say is different to your normal speech patterns, then they will pick up on it immediately. That's why simply learning textbook answers to objections will not work. For example, if your natural speech when you make a presentation is very conversational and informal, and then you ask a very formal question, then it stands out like a sore thumb. Imagine someone in the royal family working on a market stall. The contrast can be spotted immediately. We cannot tell you what to do in these situations. That is something that must be decided by you. But we can help you to find your own system, a system and a natural style that works well for you. If you have read any books on problem solving in sales, and there are many out there, then you have probably got a standard answer to any objection in your mind. It may be something that you have learned by rote, or it may even be something that you have adapted to the way that you think. Formula dealing with objections. Listen, repeat when suitable, pause, recognize, but sales argument. There is a very simple formula that I like to use when it comes to dealing with objections. Taking the objection that it is too expensive as an example, it is easy to apply this formula to it. If the client declares that it is too expensive, simply repeat what he says in the form of a question. Expensive? What you are doing here is returning the objection straight back to the client. It's a 180-degree switch of emphasis. It's just like returning a good serve in tennis. Your opponent is quite chuffed that he's produced what he thinks is a good serve, but you have batted the ball straight back into his court. The emphasis is not on you to justify the expense, but rather on him to clarify his objection. Also, it demonstrates beyond any doubt that you are listening to him, and are also prepared to consider any objections he may have. The next stage is the pause. Wait for the client to clarify his objections. This will work for you in a number of ways. You can demonstrate your listening skills, and it will also give you a chance to discover exactly what the objection is about. Is it too expensive in its current format? Is it too expensive right now? When you have that information, you can deal with it. If you don't have that information from the client, then it can be a barrier neither of you can get over. The next stage is recognize. Recognize the objection. This means quite simply agree with the client. This may sound a little off-pat, but you need to show your empathy with the client. Once again, you are demonstrating that you are prepared to listen and to work around the objection. You are also creating an even better rapport with the customer by acknowledging things from his point of view. For example, I can understand why you think it is expensive. The word "but" can be detrimental to most sales negotiations. However, in this case, it can actually be put to good use. The word "but" completely negates everything that is said before it. So here you can use it to your advantage. I can see why you think it is expensive, but... The person listening to you will have to acknowledge that they have been heard, and you will be able to continue to sell. A brilliant way of practicing this is in the home. If there are any household tasks that you want to get out of. For example, if your spouse asks you to empty the dishwasher, 1. Listen to your spouse when he or she says, "Empty the dishwasher." 2. Repeat, "Empty the dishwasher." 3. Pause. "It's your turn to empty the dishwasher." 4. Recognize. "I know it's my turn to empty the dishwasher, but I have to do something else right now." In this case, the word "but" has completely negated the original objection. Try this, and you may never have to empty the dishwasher or do the laundry, clean the bathroom, vacuum the living room ever again. Everything changes when you change. Quotation by Jim Rohn. Creativity means believing you have greatness. Quotation by Wayne Dwyer. Use your network to get leads. Referrals get results. Referrals are among the most powerful and effective sources of leads. They make every cold call much warmer, and they give you a running start in building trust with the prospect. I highly recommend BNI. BNI philosophy. The philosophy of this organization is built upon the idea of giver's gain. By giving business to others, you will get business in return. This is predicated on the age-old idea of what goes around comes around. BNI mission. The mission of BNI is to help members increase their business through a structured, positive, and professional word-of-mouth program that enables them to develop long-term, meaningful relationships with quality business professionals. Belonging to BNI is like having dozens of salespeople working for you, because all of them carry several copies of your business cards around with them. When they meet someone who could use your products or services, they take out your card and recommend you. It's as simple as that. It's simple because it's based on a proven concept by BNI founder Dr. Ivan Meisner called Giver's Gain. If I give you business, you'll give me business, and we'll both benefit as a result. Last year alone, in 2010, members of BNI passed 6.5 million referrals, which generated over $2.8 billion worth of business for its members. BNI is a business and professional networking organization that allows only one person per professional classification or speciality to join a chapter. Would you like to increase your business by 20, 30, 50, or as much as 100%? You can see results like this. Many have. Some participants have added as many as 50 new clients in the first 2 years. Successful businesses depend on word of mouth. Word of mouth advertising is the best advertising there is. BNI provides a structured and supportive system of giving and receiving business. It does so by providing an environment in which you develop personal relationships with dozens of other qualified business professionals. By establishing this formal relationship with other people, you will have the opportunity to substantially increase your business. See www.bni.com. Also see www.bnipodcast.com. To give an example of how powerful this official BNI podcast is, and taken from episode 209 called The 10-Point Checklist. Today we're talking about a face-to-face word-of-mouth checklist of credibility, enhancing materials you need to have available. 1. Testimonial letters from satisfied clients. 2. Photos of yourself, your office, your products. 3. Logos of your key customers. 4. List of memberships and affiliations. 5. A question and answer sheet. 6. Photos of awards or certificates you and your staff have earned. 7. Articles that you've published or have been mentioned in. 8. Brochures, circulars, data sheets, product catalogues. 9. Items that help you explain your business, example, annual report. 10. Articles about trends affecting your business. You should have these materials available both in hard copy to bring with you and on your website. What is LinkedIn? From the LinkedIn website. LinkedIn is the world's largest professional network with over 100 million members and growing rapidly. LinkedIn connects you to your trusted contacts and helps you exchange knowledge, ideas and opportunities with a broader network of professionals. LinkedIn gives you the keys to controlling your online identity. Have you Googled yourself lately? You never know what may come up. LinkedIn profiles rise to the top of search results, letting you control the first impression people get when searching for you online. Stay in touch with colleagues and friends. In today's professional world, people change jobs and locations constantly. By connecting on LinkedIn, your address book will never go out of date. Your contacts update their profiles, keeping you current with their latest jobs, projects, and contact info. You'll stay in closer contact with great tools to communicate and collaborate. Explore opportunities. Whether you're looking for a career opportunity, winning new clients, or building your professional reputation, LinkedIn connects you to jobs, sales leads, and ideal business partners. With our powerful search engine, company research tools, and a job board that shows who you know at listed companies, LinkedIn is the place to turn for new opportunities. You have a tremendous source of leads just waiting for you. This network not only includes everyone you deal with in the context of your work, but also the qualified people whom you have met in all other activities in your life. These are the people who know you and trust you, and most of them know at least one individual or company who could truly use what you are selling. Create a company page on LinkedIn. Company pages are a company's profile of record on LinkedIn and a powerful way to speak to millions of professionals through word-of-mouth recommendations and trusted testimonials. It's like a LinkedIn profile for a company. For LinkedIn members, company pages are a great way to research companies you're interested in. Follow them to stay updated, see what kind of people work there, and even review the products and services you use. For companies, company pages present an opportunity to reveal the human side of your company, provide a peek at the individuals behind your brand, and highlight how members use your products. Your company page offers tools to bring your brand to life. Display ads on LinkedIn is an outstanding way to promote your small business.